The presidential motorcade has just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas and was circling through the fringes of the business district when three shots suddenly rang out.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
The Constitution is dying. And it's not dying because, you know, we've decided to take it upon ourselves to kill it. It's not dying because it's irrelevant or that it's a living document that we are suddenly trying to shift and shape and change to fit whatever kind of progressive ideology someone wants to submit towards it. It's dying because we are allowing it to die. We are being taught that it should die. It's becoming ignored. And just as Conservative Review host Steve Deese always says, we aren't a nation of laws. We are a nation of political will. Do we have the will to uphold our Constitution? I mean, that's the reason why I backed the candidates I backed in the primaries for the GOP. Mainly because the other parties were just bankrupt. I mean, the Libertarian Party out there sending out their tweets about how North Korea is more accepting of libertarian ideas than America because of weed. Stop with the weed, libertarians. Stop with the weed. We get it. You really want that legalized. But there's other platforms that you need to focus on. You know, I mean, other parties like the Constitutional Party. The Constitution Party, nothing against Daryl Castle, but the guy, he's a truther. He actually missed a couple points in his platform that don't even jive with the Constitution. And on top of all of that, he was boring and just, he's been trying to run for the last couple decades. So when I looked towards who I wanted to restore the Constitution, because Obama decimated it for the last 8 years, you know, he weaponized bureaucracies and grew government and allowed things to be included in the that were unconstitutional. I felt as though after 8 years of that, we needed somebody who was grounded in the Constitution. That the makeup of this individual inherently defaults to them thinking, is whatever we're dealing with constitutional or not? I mean, yeah, the president can say he upholds the Constitution and all, but I don't feel it's his default setting. I mean, and I didn't want a simple populist. Yeah, we should control our borders. We should know who's coming into our backyard. And we should encourage those wanting to join our community to participate in our culture by learning the language in which we communicate with our neighbors and citizens. To want those people that are looking to come to America for a new life, to learn about America's history. What's its historical reasoning? What's the historical context as to why we are the people that we are? We're not just going to shove them over here, stick them in a corner, and let them live like their country in our country. And not, you know, recognize our laws. So I understand that. But what we need to do is we need to focus on constitutional restoration. We've allowed the silencing of opposing viewpoints without referring to whether or not it's even legal occur. We've allowed those who wish to peacefully assemble, whether or not we agree or even despise it, to be shut down violently. We've allowed those people to lose their livelihoods over what they believe in. Again, whether or not we agree or even despise it. And now we sit back and cheer. We sit back and scream, what does the president think about all this? Well, first off, we've placed too much power into the hands of the chief executive. America simply believes that if they show up every 4 years to the Grand Ole American Idol contest, that they put the person in office who's going to fix it all. They also don't understand it's not a popularity contest. You can't text your vote to 666 for candidate A and 777 for candidate B because one's Satan and one is Christ incarnate. You know, look at all those people laying hands on the presidential candidate. He must be a diehard Christian. We had 50 separate state elections with state districts deciding who the state chooses for president. This is so that the little guy who lives out in BFE, bum you know what, Egypt, doesn't lose his voice because his district only has about like three people living in it. While the urban mecca, who's just progressively downing the drain, they're circling the drain for whatever decadent ideology they want to surround themselves with, they would decide for that entire state because they have tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands, maybe millions living in it. We've given too much power to that individual who is in the White House. And while they're all golfing, Bush, Obama, Trump, it doesn't matter, all down the line, the Republic lives on. We should realize that. And we should stop saying, well, I don't like what's happening. We need the government to do something to fix it. It's the completely wrong take. Completely wrong. But that's the default setting of much of America these days. You know, we have an incident like 9/11 happen. Well, we got to do something to stop it. Let's make a new agency like Department of Homeland Security. I mean, we don't have a National Guard or anything. We don't have, you know, the FBI with counterterrorism. Let's go ahead and make the Department of Homeland Security. And by the way, let's pass the Patriot Act so we can kind of listen in on some stuff. You know, we're going to make sure that we don't unmask the American citizens from the ones, you know, we're going to be able to pick out the ones that we don't want to spy on from the ones that we do. How did that work out, Susan Rice? How did that work out, Loretta Lynch? Obama? So we don't need the government to come in and fix everything. We don't need a Patriot Act. We don't need a transgender bathroom law. We don't need the Supreme Court to interpret and pass a ruling to allow for the nation to recognize something that was never even in the Constitution to begin with. We also need to view a few recent news stories that may seem completely unrelated and how they are converging, how they are intertwined, and how they impact each other. From the violence in Charlottesville that happened with the white nationalist group that decided to get a permit so they can peacefully assemble and get attacked by Antifa and Black Lives Matter, to the silencing of the Google employee via termination, to the skewing of information and the oppression of the tech and social media companies. Yeah, they're private companies, but what they're doing is very important because they all impact each other in ways that affect you and me directly. So in all these news stories, we need to ask a few questions in all these instances. And I've got two that I always start with. How does our natural rights and our morality view these instances and these news items? What does the Constitution say about them as well? That's where my show content starts. Of course, I'm a Christian. My Christian faith is where I center question number one on. I look at it and go, hey, how does God look at this? And then how does the Constitution feel about this? Does it sit well with you that an employee of one of the biggest, largest information funneling and controlling tech firms would be terminated over providing criticism towards its company policies? Yeah, it's a non-governmental organization. It's a private sector entity. They're a business. They can do what they want. But they are a public business, which means citizens who own shares have the ability to affect the company's direction monetarily. There are CEOs that oversee the direction. There's board of directors that provide business governance. But ultimately, the shareholder makes the decision over its success. I mean, should the government do something to rectify this situation? No. And if you don't agree with what a company like Google did, don't use their products. There are other options that exist. I mean, if you don't want tracking, get DuckDuckGo for search engine, searching the web. There are competitive products out there. Do I think what Google did, firing someone who thoughtfully put out a memo that addressed company practices that fly in the face of anti-discrimination measures, who pointed out that women and men are just inherently different because of their interest, should he be fired? Who showed the hypocrisy of their policies? This guy showed Google the hypocrisy of their policies by pointing out that some employee enrichment education programs are available to certain races and genders and not available to others. Should that employee be fired? It's a stupid move by Google, in my opinion. But that's their company. And it's you who either support it or decide to go elsewhere with your dollar. But we should be concerned about a number of things. We should be concerned that the news media turned around and painted this guy some sort of anti-feminist, anti-woman, hate-filled individual. We should be concerned about the fact that Google has tremendous influence in public governing policy. They're one of the major companies pushing for net neutrality. Everybody's going, oh, well, I don't want to be throttled down on the internet. You know, I want to be able to watch Netflix. My Netflix experience isn't good, even though I can watch an entire movie at 30,000 feet in an airplane on a screen the size of a, you know, dollar bill. I mean, how ridiculous of an argument is that? And what they don't realize is the real impact of net neutrality is going to be the silencing of conservatism online, the hiding of information. I mean, Facebook has changed their algorithms to minimize conservative news and views, and they say it's for enhanced experience via customization. But make no mistake, the impact on the information is tremendous. Google controlling search engine results. I mean, look up Abraham Lincoln. They say he's a part of the National Union Party. What? Are you serious? No. He was the first Republican president, because we don't want the Republicans to be looked at as the party against slavery, even though that's historically accurate. I mean, their diversity czar at Google, the person responsible for firing this outspoken employee was somebody who assisted Hillary Clinton. So we know they have a huge political agenda. And Twitter, good Lord, shadow banning people. I've engaged on there more than most. And I've got more friends that have been silenced and suspended all because of their conservative viewpoints when I've seen just the most vile and disgusting comments lobbed at me. And those people go on every single day without any sort of repercussions. YouTube has changed its monetization. And we're going to cover that in a few because it's impacted conservative views. Like Steven Crowder, that's how he made his money, was through subscriptions and viewership through YouTube. He, luckily, CRTV stepped in and helped him keep his platform going. But his search engine or his YouTube monetization, it diminished because of their changes. Take what happened in Charlottesville. A group of homely douchebags who are focused on white supremacy rallied to unite the right, which they don't even have any sort of ideological equivalence to conservatism. They want socialism. They want national democratic socialism. You know, I mean, Korea, North Korea is the democratic republic, the people's republic. You know, I mean, it should bother you that that's something that these people are pushing for. But you know what? They got permits. They went through the process to legally protest. What killed me was the people that were fine with Antifa and Black Lives Matter, who we've covered. We've told you the people that Tides Foundation, Soros, Democracy Alliance, all these groups are funneling money and organizing these violent groups to show up and shut things down like this. I don't care if you're a bunch of atheist mimes out there marching on Washington for your cause. It's your right to do so. That's First Amendment. That's why looking at the Constitution makes a big deal. And instantly, when all this happened, with Antifa showing up and they're trying to skew it as being the violence of the Tiki Torch citronella douchebags who are marching, all the tastemakers have to show up. I mean, Lord, you know, the artist that does the royal song. She said, I just want to say, I'm so, so sorry. All white people are responsible for this system's thrive and fall. We have to do better. I'm sorry. Yeah. Royal, the most monotonous, droning, oral tragedy I've heard in ages. And mostly white people are buying that music. So white people, do better. Stop buying Lorde's music. We're going to see her on a VH1 pop-up video. Where are they now? One-hit wonder show with a bunch of G-list comedians and Paris Hilton out there making snarky remarks about them. But you know what? Those people had to show up. And we've learned that the governor, Terry McAuliffe, had actively called a stand down for the police department. We know that the mayor of Charlottesville is a giant socialist. And so all of this information we didn't get from the news media. They spent all day saying, hey, you guys got to decry these people. You conservatives need to get out there and decry these white nationalists. And you know what? We were doing that before you asked us to, because we said these people don't represent us at all. And while you're doing that, we weren't getting the information that we need. You know how we got it? We got it through social media. We got it through the sharing of information online through Facebook and Twitter and what have you. So the shadow banning, the algorithm switching, the monetization minimizing, the suspension of accounts, all of that should be of great concern to you, because we wouldn't know the information that happened in Charlottesville had it not been for these platforms. And seeing that they're firing their employees for standing up for a conservative viewpoint while they're silencing you and I by, you know, shoving us off into social media's corner, putting us in time out over saying what we believe, we know that this information sharing could change. Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Welcome back. Before we get into Charlottesville and the misinformation campaign of the mainstream media, we have to realize that we wouldn't know any of the real details as to who the main players were and everything that's going on behind the scenes and underneath the surface if it wasn't for social media, if it wasn't for the sharing of the information from the alternative media. And in the wake of the misinformation campaign by the media regarding Charlottesville, the ability to pierce the darkness, shine a light through the fog, has been able to happen because of these platforms and the direct connectivity that individuals never had before. But the progressives have learned to infiltrate these platforms, and it's now a threat. That's why the firing of the Google employee over the diversity memo, his critique of their policies, is so significant to what happened in Charlottesville and the conservative media in the future and how we receive and share information. I mean, all the Twitter followers and the Twitter users I know that have been shut down for conservative speech while I'm inundated with vile, vulgar expletives by trolls left and right. The Facebook algorithm changes that have completely changed my view of what I see on Facebook to the point where I don't even barely go on Facebook anymore. Not to mention the fact that I don't want to have mundane arguments with people I went to grade school with. It's pretty pointless. I'd rather talk directly to the politicians and give them my thoughts and feelings. I'd love to excoriate Jim Acosta from CNN directly instead of, you know, some girl I dated back 25 years ago. So, you know, those kind of things are happening, but it's even happening on YouTube. And Google owns YouTube. And YouTube is a platform that if you have so many subscribers and you have so much activity on your YouTube channel, they pay you. And that has changed. From Ian Miles Chong from The Daily Caller, whom he's a person I suggest you follow on Twitter, YouTube is now demonetizing videos from content creators deemed too controversial for platforms, and conservatives and independents are being heavily impacted. The move follows YouTube's announcement earlier in August to catch and flag controversial religious and supremacist content hosted on the popular video hosting site. Political and social commentators on YouTube are feeling the hurt, and they believe that they are being blacklisted for having wrong opinions. Affected creators are unable to make money for their work, and which is automatically flagged or vetted by volunteer experts. In addition, the new system incorporates tougher standards for controversial videos that do not break YouTube's terms of services, which are placed in a purgatory state that effectively censors them from being recommended to YouTube viewers. Independent journalists like Luke Rodowski, who runs We Are Change, told The Daily Caller that hundreds of his videos were demonetized in a single day on Thursday, effectively killing his ability to earn a living on YouTube. He was quoted as saying, "Having had 660 of my videos demonetized in one day left me a little stunned, since this is the core of my income, but left me with the impression that this was done on purpose," he said. Who said that the videos included some of the most popular videos from years ago. "This was videos from years ago predominantly targeting the most viewed videos, which has eviscerated my income." He also believes it isn't a coincidence that he was targeted. Says that he has experienced repeated issues with YouTube. So is Steven Crowder, by the way, from Louder with Crowder. He's covered this numerous times. "After dealing with all the repeated issues with YouTube, it is clear that this is a campaign to de-incentivize any critical thinkers and anti-authoritarians from their platform," he said. Conservative vlogger and cultural pundit Mark Dice told Daily Caller he believes YouTube is upset at the rise of conservative channels on their platform over the last year and that the new policies are designed to squelch them. Quote, I think YouTube is furious that so many conservative channels have gotten so popular in the last year, and they don't want us to be able to work a full-time job and make a full-time living doing what we're doing because our message is at odds with almost anything Google and YouTube stands for. Mark Dace, who has even monetized videos, he noticed his monetized videos are underperforming as a result of the change. To deal with the demonetization of his channel, he said he plans to continue producing videos, supplementing his income through Patreon, which is another platform that has turned tail on conservatives lately, too. He said that his videos performed better when he had a tenth of his subscriber count years ago. Quote, YouTube has kicked the bee's nest by going after Diamond and Silk, a channel of two female Trump supporters. I think it won't be long before President Trump is commenting on YouTube's censorship, he said. And that's one of the things we have to look at. You know, we have to really watch before we jump to judgment as to whether government intervention is involved. But we have to also look at the fact that Media Matters has a four-year plan that was just leaked on destroying conservative media, or what they call misinformation, based on this leaked document that was uncovered that states they have top outcomes that are bullet point. Number one, over the next 4 years, Media Matters will focus on achieving the following outcomes: serial misinformers and right-wing propagandists inhabiting everything from social media to the highest levels of government will be exposed. Internet and social media platforms like Google and Facebook will no longer uncritically and without consequence hold and enrich fake news sites and propagandists, and toxic alt-right social media-fueled harassment campaigns that silence, dissent, and poison our national discourse will be punished and halted. Now, remember our show on Democracy Alliance. Go back and listen to it. It's the one dealing with Bill O'Reilly. We go over who is funding Media Matters. Who is funding the groups that are symbiotic and infused within Antifa and Black Lives Matter? Those groups like Organizing for America, Color for Change. Those groups like FRSO, the Freedom Roads Socialist Organization. And they're all being funded by Democracy Alliance, who includes George Soros. And I know that sounds like the boogeyman, but he is involved. And when you look at Rob Reiner, Hollywood's involved. Liz Winstead, who is an activist now, who basically infected the news industry with The Daily Show and infecting culture in the process. They're all colliding to change America. And they're doing so through colluding with Google and YouTube and Facebook and Twitter down the line. But then we have to ask ourselves the questions I brought up in the first segment. Morally and ethically, we know this is all wrong. We wouldn't do these things. What does the Constitution say? Should the government be doing what Tucker Carlson and Kurt Schlichter have been saying and regulating Google? That's not conservatism. Making it a public utility? No, that's not even a tenet of conservatism. Yeah, it would be great for their side right now, but what happens when we get an Obama administration 2.0? When that comes to town, what happens? Oh, will we have the Patriot Act unmasking rules? Will that stay in place? Heck no. Weaponizing the executive bureaucracies? Yeah, that happened under Obama. The NSA spying on all the citizens? Yeah. I mean, net neutrality is being pushed for this same reason right now, and let's review net neutrality, shall we? Michael Harrington has a piece on this covering this. He says, looking at the layers of the internet, there's the hardware which allows the internet to exist. Many companies own portions of this to, you know, and some governments do as well. You are almost entirely going to get on the internet via internet service provider, unless you're extremely wealthy, connected, academically researching, etc. You will skip that level. Sometimes these guys are the ones who own an area of the internet's hardware as well. And these guys lease access, provide you a link to the main hub, and charge you a fee for doing so. They also provide the hardware companies a certain amount as well. And then there are the content providers, Google, YouTube, Netflix. An additional unseen layer exists, which is the patents and trade secrets, which helps the internet run in some manner. Most things with which the internet runs is using open license or a license with such a low cost that no one talks about it. So some things have higher prices, including things like your cell phone. net neutrality was implemented to make one layer have advantage over the other. Some hardware companies like Comcast, some internet service providers like AT&T, some content providers like Google, for example, are trying to dominate what has turned into the most profitable portion of the internet to this date. That would be movies and television. That's where the guys or the premise is being focused on. Hardware companies were in a bind because they had to provide bandwidth to anyone, and it was admittedly getting hard for them to keep up in some regions. They also, however, saw the profitability of the captive viewer audience. However, they were the worst of the abusers of the efforts to provide content with glaringly high prices, fixed purchasing plans, and big long-term contracts. They could do this because their locations that they are operating in sometimes only source for both hardware and internet service providers. Some internet service providers were also hurting from the lack of bandwidth and wanted in on the game. AT&T was really late to the game with any movie offering and didn't want to pay a premium to take over an existing movie service. So if they were going to, they'd probably, if they can get away with it, charge all movie services of any sorts a very high premium to their customers. That also included their own movie streaming service with an extra freebie thanks to their hardware-level access to cellular internet, such as no internet limits or downloading their movies. Additionally, the content providers were in a bind. YouTube, Google, Netflix, and others were going to literally be made extinct if those companies were allowed to play rough and ruin their profits. So the idea of net neutrality was to make it so that content providers would pay one price regardless of the content. This would affect mostly the internet service provider level, since the hardware level was already forced to a certain extent to comply. In the background, threats using some intellectual property rights were also made. The Obama administration noted that some internet service providers have a natural monopoly to an extent. Some cities restrict other internet service providers out, such as mine. Many cannot compete with the cellular market effectively and so forth. So the Obama administration initially set to make the top layer protected from the middle layer and a bit from the ground layer. However, the way the Obama administration finally set up to do so was abusive to most sides in many ways. Instead of identifying barriers to market entry and access, it was creating barriers to market entry and access. The cost of net neutrality set up that his administration created was so burdensome that companies literally stopped growing at all. They would not accept new customer regions. They would not improve their hardware. They would not have a chance to profit from their hardware or internet service provider levels. And it was not just about heavy content use by movies and videos. It was an effort to control growth with an extremely heavy hand. Eventually, if Hillary was elected, we would have probably seen an increase in subsidies. Oh, yes. There were subsidies at several levels, one for the poor, one for the rural areas not yet provided for. Instead of making it easier for companies to just grow and compete, net neutrality would dictate as much of that as possible for growth. The biggest problem is a lot of people paid huge amounts in the name of net neutrality to make it happen. They made so much noise, so many fake stories, generated panic in many circles that there's a lot of hearsay about net neutrality. But it was never about neutrality. It was about helping some while implementing costly rules, laws, and regulations to help control the internet itself. Turning that thing into a public utility would be dangerous. The regulation of speech, the regulation of content, we would be in a situation where we would be in the dark for the most part on what's going on with Charlottesville. And we're going to get into what really happened with Charlottesville, with the governor, with the organizers, with the sides involved, with the fact that the police were told to stand down and the orders, the permits were voided through the state of emergency, and get into the details of on-the-ground views on the other side of the break. Stick with me.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Let's go through real quickly the backstory, the media narrative of what happened in Charlottesville versus what we have learned through conservative social media accounts to juxtapose what's going on, because this also displays why the left is targeting social media accounts by conservatives. First off, white nationalist groups decide to rally over the removal of Confederate monuments in Charlottesville, dubbed the Unite the Right rally. They marched on a Friday night with tiki torches to the monument. Thank God for them, it's August. They can load up on those torches and citronella at Home Depot on the summer clearance rack for dirt cheap, basically. At a certain point, counter-protesters arrive. Violence erupts. Next thing you know, a state of emergency is called by Governor McAuliffe. And then a vehicle drives through the crowd, killing Heather Heyer, injuring dozens. The media, the news media, demands conservatives to denounce the white nationalist. And we were actively doing so before the demand on social media. We were not with these people. We said that over and over due to the leftist mainstream media headlines pinning it on conservatism. They demand Donald Trump to make a statement decrying the rally and the white nationalist. And his response sounded very similar to a statement that Obama would put out on an incident involving radical Islam. Even though he did call out both sides, which is more than what Obama ever did on radical Islam, he did keep it a bit ambiguous. Which the theory being bandied about is that Steve Bannon advised him not to call them out by name because he didn't want to alienate those Grateful Dead fringe wings of the party. So, especially after his vicious, immediate, and very specific tweet in response to the Merrick CEO who bailed from the Manufacturing Council, it seemed kind of odd that he kind of took his time on this one. But anyways, and then when he did call them out, finally, he was sure to indicate that the violence of the alt-left was referring to Black Lives Matter and Antifa. And that's when reporters like Scott Gilmore from the Boston Globe and Brian Fallon from CNN and John Harwood from CNBC decided to take World War II photos of America invading Germany, and they all tried to make it a point that Antifa and Black Lives Matter were some sort of band of freedom fighters coming to the rescue. You don't get to just show up as a freedom fighter and start becoming vigilantes using weapons to shut down a protest that had a legally obtained permit. But anyways, Brian Fallon went so far as to post a caption to the picture stating, "The alt-left also confronted Nazis without a permit." To which I responded, "This is also not on American soil. Adhering to the constitutional rights of any group's right of free assembly, no matter how disgraceful they may be. Please stop making me defend these idiots. I don't like them. I do so because when it's your turn to exercise those same rights of assembly, you're going to want to have that same courtesy as well." So that was the narrative. Here is the information that ricocheted through social media based on conservative accounts. And it gets interesting. Jason Kessler was the one who got the entire rally going. He, on the Southern Poverty Law Center website, is listed as, interestingly, a former Occupy Wall Street attendee and a former Obama supporter. He became a white nationalist on November 2015 when Trump won election, imagine, you know, apparently. And then on top of that, he had a new blog that started, strangely, in January when his Come to Jesus change of heart aligned with the inauguration. The city council knocked down his permit for application, which the federal judge reinstated. And this isn't an endorsement, just simply the facts, but the governor, Governor McAuliffe, who, if you watch the debates between him and Cuccinelli, clearly doesn't understand his executive powers of governorship. He was on a mission to destroy the Tiki Torch nationalist douchebag march, and he pulled the pin on the state of emergency declaration before reported violence was even an issue, which nullified any permit of lawful assembly. The Black Lives Matter and Antifa protesters were busting in droves, pictures online. Not only was it Tides Foundation and Soros groups like Crime of Think and FRSO embedded within these groups, but many were paid protesters from crowds on demand, which is perfect for the Bernie Sanders socialist indoctrinated mama basement dwellers passing over any job while waiting for that perfect gig that was supposed to be assigned to them after spending four or more years on a degree and $100,000 in student loans on that German fashion arts history degree that's worthless. Why fight for $15 an hour on minimum wage increases when you can fight for $25 an hour against fascism at a protest where you can be violent with no worry of arrest? Then Mayor Petty of Charlottesville put out the call to the police not to make an arrest until he commands to do so, which in effect was a de facto police stand down. Vice Mayor Ed Augustus attended pro-Antifa protest in response to Heather Heyer's death that weekend and is pictured in social media wearing Black Panther's backpacks and has some vile tweets about rape and such. It's been reported that the police presence just evaporated right around the time that when the car attack happened. And when it did happen, I watched the video, it took an extremely long amount of time for the police to respond. These are all details that fly in the face of the mainstream media reporting and their narratives. And we wouldn't know this without the ability to share the information in real time. So if Media Matters and Google and Facebook and YouTube and et al., they have their way, they will shut this down, and we will not have the ability to pierce this darkness anymore. Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Okay, so now that we've set the stage for what we were talking about as far as, you know, the media narrative versus what actually happened, let's go through what one of the attendees, who was actually one of the speakers, his name is Pax Dickinson, what he said as far as his account goes. He said, when I arrived, I was funneled onto Exit 1 and up to Pen 1. This is from the Daily Caller as well. Shortly after, I was able to get around the state police, dividing pens to the south, and made my way into Pen 2, which contained the audio setup for those planned to speak at the rally. Both exit stairs were defended by rally attendees with shields, and Antifa skirmished with them at each stairway. Contact between the two sides was isolated to the positions and relatively under control from my vantage point. Within Pen 2, people felt relatively relaxed, and we chatted and socialized while waiting for noon for the rally to properly start. Shortly after the rally attendees were presented in the park, word began to spread that a state of emergency had been declared, presumably by Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe. At my position in Pen 2, people were confused by this. It seemed unnecessary and preemptive since the rally seemed fairly well under control at this point. It was about 11:30 a.m. and the rally wasn't even scheduled to start until noon. After some minutes of confusion and rumors, Virginia State Police got on a loudspeaker and announced that we had been declared an unlawful assembly. We were instructed to leave the park and told that anyone refusing to do so would be arrested. Attendees began attempting to leave via exits 1 and 2 and were set upon by Antifa as they attempted to do so. After a quick consultation, a small group of rally headliners and attendees decided to engage in civil disobedience and get ourselves arrested, myself included. We told our security teams to leave the park to avoid arrest, while Virginia State Police began forming a shield wall at the north end of the park. The pens were nearly empty at this point, except for those planning to be arrested and a few people still attempting to run the Antifa gauntlet at the stairs to escape from the park. The Virginia State Police shield wall began advancing south, and we linked our arms and held our ground. We told police we refused to leave and planned to engage in civil disobedience. We were respectful, and we informed them we would not resist arrest, but we would refuse to leave the park willingly. The shield wall advanced on us and began to shove our line. We stood firm and held our ground for a few minutes. Police on the line did not say a word and refused to arrest us while shoving us with shields and swinging them at us. After a few minutes of shoving, our line was pepper sprayed from a cop behind the police shield wall, and our resistance crumbled. Being near the end of the line, I was not sprayed directly. The spray drifted into the wind onto my arms and my face, but my eyes remained clear. We retreated through the western barricade, but police on First Street would not let us onto the street and forced us to retreat south. We were pushed through the barricade at the south end of First Street onto Market Street, which was lined on both sides with mobs of screaming Antifa with no police presence whatsoever. We ran west on Market Street, running a gauntlet of Antifa, throwing bottles, sticks, and rocks. Two people, I believe, were nearly blinded by pepper spray. I followed them closely, but then dropped back as the crowd hurled everything they had at another protest headliner, luckily missing with most of it. After running a few blocks west, we reached the intersection of Market and Preston, where a shield wall had been set up by rally attendees on a grass strip along Market Street. Casualties are being treated there, including multiple heavily bleeding scalp wounds and pepper spray injuries. Luckily, all the injuries seemed superficial except one man with a very bad head injury who seemed to be going in and out of consciousness. From there, the bulk of the rally attendees were able to march north and eventually reached the relative safety of McIntyre Park about 2 miles away, but many had been scattered throughout the city by the chaos of the dispersal. At that point, the police had completely lost control of the city. The state of emergency order meant that the public gathering was de facto illegal, but Antifa was still allowed to roam freely, bearing weapons and attacking people. This chaos ultimately led directly to the vehicular incident that killed a woman and badly injured more than a dozen others. My conclusions were that police wanted this to happen. It's clear that the Virginia State Police had specific orders to drive us out of the park to the south into the teeth of the violent, armed Antifa counter-protesters. Police could have easily separated the barricades and removed all rally participants to the north, away from the Antifa, and into empty streets fully controlled by law enforcement. We were driven into a hostile situation intentionally. It's impossible not to believe that the authorities issuing these orders knew exactly what would happen and that they wanted the rally attendees to be harmed and possibly killed. There was an assumption that police would allow a retreat to the north. In the event of a rally cancellation, no one imagined police would choose to facilitate a clearly violent situation and force two sides into uncontrolled contact. This looks like it was done with the intent to deny civil rights of a legal protest in direct defiance of a federal court order. We were set up and trapped and then pushed into a kill zone full of hostile armed enemies. Injury at the event was due to nonsensical withdrawal of the police order. And that's what we were talking about. The mayor gives the order, hey, do not arrest anybody unless I say so. So that's a de facto stand down on its own. You've got the fact that the governor of Virginia, Terry McAuliffe, and like I said, if you saw the debates between him and Ken Cuccinelli, a strong Tea Party conservative, you would see that he was advocating for things that were outside of what his executive powers would be as a governor. And Ken Cuccinelli was calling him on it. So for him to declare a de facto martial law by basically declaring state of emergency before the fact and nullifying the reinstated federal judge's outlook of the permits that were denied by a city council, well, then you know it was sabotage. And you know that these people were bussed in and that they were hired and that this movement has gone to Durham and pulled down statues in Seattle, and we're going to see them this weekend in Boston. We know this movement is set to destroy America, and there's some unseemly things going on with their methods on what they plan to do. But we wouldn't know any of this. We wouldn't know who Crime I Think is. We wouldn't know who Antifa, Black Lives Matter, Freedom Road Socialist Organization, which you can check out on my Black Lives Matter piece and the Antifa piece that we did. You can listen to those on my podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn app, Spreaker. And you can hear all the details, and we may go back through them again because I think they need to be refreshed, but we wouldn't know any of this without the internet, without social media. And what they're trying to do on the social media end is destroy that ability to get through the darkness of the mainstream media narrative and whatever the government has planned with these incidents. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.